Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to RNIB Tech Talk, first heard here on RNIB Connect Radio. Each Tuesday lunchtime at 1, you can catch us again on Thursday evenings at 9 or Saturday tea time at 5. If you prefer a podcast, well, that drops each Friday. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk or ask your smart speaker or smartphone to play the latest episode of RNIB Tech Talk. Of course, this is the UK Blind and Partially Sighted People's opportunity to come together to explore and learn and discover the world of accessible technology. It's our chance to get together each week and find out what's going on in the world of technology from one another. And we're always keen to hear from you. So if you've got something to say, if you've heard something on the show that you'd like to respond or comment on or ask a question, then do get in contact via email. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Paulina hears about the new Discover Digital project that aims to improve our health and well-being. Callum Stoneman will be taking a look at the latest Mortal Kombat game that promises to be the most accessible yet. And we'll hear the final part in our series on Windows Narrator. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts this week. We've got three of you, Tasni Marshad, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich. Welcome all.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Right. Let's come to each of you and see what's grabbing your attention. What are you liking in the world of technology this week? Hubert.
Well, for me, my Apple Watch has finally decided to gracefully automatically update itself. And I'm quite liking the new Watch OS. Only started exploring it, so I've not found too many, but I do like it already. I do like the interface, especially like music player and such like that I'm currently using the most. But yeah, it's the new watchOS for me that I've currently finally updated. So that's one of my few highlights.
Yeah, I'm liking the widgets on there.
The widgets on there are quite nice. Again, I want to customize that a bit more because the widgets there at the moment are kind of fairly generic, like your dates and times and I think messages and such. But it'd be interesting to see how you can customize that. It is very much like Glances. If anyone remembers Glances on the Apple Watch, like Callum said last week, it is very similar to that. It's actually really nice.
Well, let us know more about that. I got in a bit of a flap when mine updated because I put my watch on. I went to go out for a run and then suddenly discovered that it had updated. And I was pressing the side button to go into the, you know, the dock, which is where I keep my workouts app. And of course, it wasn't there.
Your control center was coming up.
Yeah, exactly. The control center yes. comes up now on that side button. So,
yeah,
they've moved things around a little bit. So let us know any bumps in the road for anyone on watchOS 10. Tasneem, what's on your radar?
Well, I'm a bit curious about what Freedom Scientific are doing at the moment with the next big thing. So that's kind of grabbing my attention at the moment, where they're requesting blind and visually impaired people to come in and give ideas about what different features they'd like in JAWS, kind of filling in the gaps, really. There's a bit of a competition going on and you can, you know, go in as a solo or as a team, submit your ideas. So that's kind of got me quite curious about, you know, different things and, you know, what I'd like to see in JAWS and where they can bridge those gaps. So, yeah, I'm kind of quite keen and exploring that a little bit more. And I think everybody should know about it so they can explore it a little bit more and see if they would like to submit things in and ideas that they have.
Yeah, I thought this was a bit unusual because I used to work in assistive technology. You know, people will be aware that, you know, back in the day I worked for a screen reader company. And of course, you would get emails all the time. People saying, well, you should do this or you should do that. Or why don't you, you know, X, Y, Z. And so I was surprised that they put this out there. You know, it seemed like is there a shortage of ideas? Are they sort of fishing around a bit? Not sure what to do. Because, of course, you know, JAWS is a very mature product now. And there will be long-time users will say, oh, well, I wish they would sort this out or sort that out. And they're, I guess, looking for fresh innovation, right? What's over the horizon?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think it's really good to kind of bring, you know, brainstorm together and make it fun and interactive and, you know, really encourage people to share their ideas. And who knows, maybe they're actually gonna really take that feedback on board and really consider, you know, seriously consider what can be done and what new features they can bring in. So yeah, I think it's really good, and just spreading the word on that basically.
Yeah, so that's on freedomscientific.com/nextbigthing, I think is the web address for that one.
Yeah, it is.
Callum Stoneman, what have you got?
I was going to say the same thing as Taz there, the next big thing. I kind of wonder if this is to do with, because NVDA has got that real, obviously it's open source, so it's got that real kind of community feel. You know, anyone can work on it and, you know, submit ideas and even submit code changes. And obviously you can't do that with JAWS. But I kind of wonder if it's just their way of bringing the community into it a bit more, you know, and just making it very clear that we've got a say in this. We can, you know, we can tell them what they want and they will try and do it. They're not, just because it's a closed source product, they're not out of reach, you know, as such. I like it. I think it's really good. I've been trying out some of the mainstream features of iOS 17 as well. We've been talking a lot about the accessibility, but one of the things that I tried out, and I was going to demo this, but it doesn't seem quite stable yet. We had some issues getting it to connect, but there's a new thing in iOS 17 called Shared CarPlay, which is quite cool. So my wife's iPhone works with, well, her iPhone and her car work with CarPlay. So she can plug her phone in and, you know, she gets a little kind of interface on her car's screen where it's got, you know, she can control her music, she can set directions up and, you know, get her directions on the car's screen and stuff. And it's all really nice, but it's touch screen. And, you know, look, it's a car. You can't complain too much really not being accessible. But what you can do now is if you're both running iOS 17, because we've both got Apple Music, I can essentially join the CarPlay session and control the music. So if I want to move to the next track, or if I want to add something to the queue or change what's playing, you can connect and do that. And it's quite nice because I can't, short of using Siri, you can't really kind of control the music independently on hers. So it's quite cool being able to do that and connect to it. I think you can have up to four people connected. So if there's a few of you in the car and you want to play around and, you know, change the music and put your own songs on, I can imagine parents with the younger kids. I can imagine me and my brother, if we had this when we were younger, they might not be too keen, but quite a nice feature when it works.
On the accessibility front, I've heard from HumanWare that their USB-C Braille devices will work over USB-C with the iPhone 15 with the USB-C
Ah,
port.
brilliant.
So that's good news. I couldn't get my Braille sense to play, but I'll just stick with Bluetooth for now, and hopefully that's coming.
Well, I'd like to try this out with my Mantis Q40, but I need someone to give me a 15 first.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I know someone who's got one, I
Do
think.
you?
Yeah,
All right. Oh,
yeah,
well,
yeah,
there you are.
yeah.
Not sure what to do with this action button, Callum. I think record at the moment, record a voice note
The voice memos.
yeah, I think that's the one for me at the moment. The text, the point and speak stuff in the magnifier, I think still, you know, it's a bit of a work in progress, you know. That hasn't quite lived up to all our hopes and dreams just yet, but you never know. Have you been tempted by the new Northern Siri voice, Callum?
The Northern Siri voice.
Yeah, so Siri Voice 3 in UK English. It's based on a sort of a northern female, a northern lass.
I have not noticed that.
Oh well, you'll have to go and have a listen.
I did have a play with the voices, but only very briefly. I'm gonna have to change my voiceover voice and have a look at that. That is impressive.
Great stuff. Well, thank you so much, Hubert Pavalkovich, Tasnim Arshad, Callum Stoneman. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Now, Paulina, here's more about the Discover Digital project.
Now, Now, we're talking today about an exciting collaboration and a very exciting campaign and project. It's all about helping improve digital health awareness. And in this case, we'll be talking about doing that for the blind and partially sighted community. And joining me today are Gozi Joe Adigwe and Macy Peebles from the Digital Hub team at Alliance. It is lovely speaking with you both today.
Hi, Paulina.
Hi, Paulina.
So let's start with the Discover Digital program first. What is it?
So Discover Digital is a project that was launched in 2018, and it's all about raising awareness of digital tools and resources that can support people's health and well-being. And it's been through many different phases in its life. So around 2018 and 2019, it was delivered through mainly doing quite large in-person events. So these were events across Scotland, in science centres and large venues. There were workshops. There was people from industry, NHS and third sector who could bring along and showcase their digital tools that they had, their apps, their online services, chat to the public. They could learn more and also feedback what they thought about them as well. And of course, with the pandemic, things like this weren't possible. So in 2021, the project developed a guide, the Discover Digital Guide. And the idea here is what was learned from all the events in 2018 and 2019 is that there's just so much available and out there, and people can find it quite overwhelming where to go, what to trust. So the guide really just offers an introduction to what digital health care and wellbeing is, lets people know, you know, what digital health is, some of its benefits, what you can access on the NHS, what people can use for their own self-management, that sort of thing. And the latest journey of the project is there's some really good learning in that guide, but we're just really keen to get the learning that's in there just out in different formats. So we've developed some online learning, but something we launched in February this year are workshops and roadshows. So the workshops are aimed at skills and knowledge for staff. So it could be frontline staff in libraries or in healthcare and social care, and to really upskill them in what's available so they can pass it on. We go along to a community event. Some of the members of the public can get some hands-on experience with some free and trusted apps and online resources. So we're really just trying to get what's in the Discover Digital Guide out there and give people a practical hands-on experience.
My role is to support the Digital Citizen Panel, which currently is a number of 124 individuals stroke organisations based around Scotland. They represent the voice of lived experience of people who live with a disability or with a long-term condition or live life as an unpaid carer. The consultation work helps to find out people's basic knowledge of digital health and social care resources in their own personal lives or across their networks or organisations. And the panel gives us a really good sense of that, and also a really good sense of what's happening from, for instance, a perspective of accessibility for people with sensory impairments, and also the infrastructure challenges that exist for people in living in rural areas, and obviously the intersectionality, i.e. what happens if you're living as a blind person in a rural area and want to access X, Y and Z services.
You have a really nice collaboration that you have developed with Ford Valley Sensory Centre. So would you mind telling us a little bit more about it?
No, I was fortunate to be able to have one of the officers from the Ford Valley Sensory Centre as one of our digital citizen panel members attend one of our meetings and indicate that there could be an opportunity to collaborate on the Discover Digital programme. We started the ball rolling to see how we can use the resources and apps that Maisie has in the Discover Digital guide, alongside the expertise of IT champions and leads at the Ford Valley Sensory Centre, to help us bring together one of these workshops that Maisie had described, that was bespoke and as accessible as possible for people with a sensory impairment.
How have you found a response from people that have attended the sessions?
I think the response so far has been really good. The roadshows and the workshops have been really popular. I think the thing that I've noticed the most is people just lack that awareness of what's out there. You know, you'll chat to someone and they might have had quite a few issues with stress or insomnia in the past, and they've maybe tried something else, they've maybe paid for something, but they don't know that there are these free and trusted, you know, apps that are clinically proven in Scotland. One's called Sleepio, it helps for insomnia. One's called Daylight, it helps with stress and anxiety. And they are commercial companies, but they're funded by the NHS for everyone in Scotland. And people just haven't heard of that. So I think the general theme that we're seeing is lack of awareness, but people are still really enthusiastic. I'd say most people we've chatted to, they don't really have, I would say, I was expecting maybe more so to see that wall or that barrier saying, I don't really want to access that, digital is not for me, not interested. But I would say more so the majority of what we're seeing is people just really keen to find out what's available and just really keen to see what they can do for their health and well-being.
Who do you think would benefit? Who would you like taking advantage of this resource you have created?
To be honest, Pauline, I don't think there's not one person that I wouldn't say could, you know, sort of derive some benefit from the resources and tools that we speak about. For me, what I've seen is that I think it's very much about when people's kind of jump in point is. We're all using digital to some extent, everybody, for some more so maybe in banking or in shopping or in social finance, etc. There are significantly fewer people using digital for their health and social care or well-being. And it's about finding what's relevant. And I think Maisie made the point insofar as whenever we've been doing roadshows and not the more kind of structured workshops, whenever we've just got like a passing through a community centre, we're finding that people are actually drawn to us by what they don't know. Actually, there's a realisation that they don't, I mean, the quality streaks on the table have nothing to do with it, of course. But certainly people do see that it's a thing. It's relevant insofar as, you know, they can identify that there's a functionality of a device or a phone, and it's about health. And then as the conversation goes on, you begin to find out that perhaps someone is a carer. And, you know, before they leave the table, the stand, they might have downloaded an app in the guides before they've left. So really, the application is really wide, I would say. And it is about like what is going to make life a little bit easier and a little bit quicker for people. If it's not going to do that, then digital may not be an option for them. And we're very clear about talking about digital human rights insofar as people do have the choice to make that informed decision to use digital or not without it compromising the quality of their care and of their quality of life. So it's getting that balance right. We certainly do the job of taking the horse to water, and then it's up to people really to find the opportunity and the chance to drink.
Yeah, I would just say that the Discover Digital Guide is not aimed at like a specific audience. The idea of it is that it can be read by anyone. It can be read by someone that's looking for their own, to improve their own health, or someone that's looking to improve, you know, the health and well-being of someone they support. It's also been put through the Hemingway tool. So the Hemingway tool is just a readability online platform where you can just ensure that what you've written can be actually read and is accessible.
If we wanted to find out a little bit more about Discover Digital and all those resources, where can we go?
If you're looking to learn more about the Discover Digital project, you can visit the Alliance website at www.alliance-scotland.org.uk and go onto the Discover Digital page.
And if you'd like to find out a little bit more about the work of the Digital Citizen Panel and indeed how to sign up, then have a look at the same website at the Digital Citizen Panel pages.
Fantastic. Well, Gauzy, Macy, it's been brilliant speaking with you today on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks very much.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Paulina.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
In the world of video games, fighting games don't come much bigger than Mortal Kombat. The game has been around for more than 30 years and they've just released their latest game, Mortal Kombat 1. And would you believe it, it includes plenty of accessibility features to help blind and partially sighted people, as well as a range of people with other disabilities and accessibility needs to play the game, which is always great to hear. And joining me now to talk a bit more about this is gamer, streamer and games consultant Rattlehead. Thanks for joining us. First off, do you want to just tell us a bit about yourself and if you can, where the name came from as well, because I'm intrigued.
Hey, yeah. So thank you first and foremost for having me today. And basically, I've been a fighting game competitor since Mortal Kombat 2011. Not Mortal Kombat 11, which came in 2019, but more like Mortal Kombat, the reboot of the series back in 2010 to 2011. But I've always been around with the franchise for since the beginning, 1992, the original arcade games. And I always kind of follow the series along the way, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know. I've always been around with the series for a long time. So, you know, I've been a fan. And I think where everything started, where we are now, is because 2011 is when I discovered the tournament scene. And I was intrigued about competing and actually taking a game that gives you the tools and you pretty much do the rest, you know. And in fighting games, we do a lot of things like combos, setups, you know, different strategies. It's like essentially like fighting somebody, you know, with another human. It's like fighting somebody like in a martial arts tournament, right? Except it's in a video game where all of your buttons do have a significance. Every single button, including just pressing, let's say, square, right? A lot of us are very attached to the frame data of the game, basically a bunch of numbers that indicates how long each move happens on the screen and all that, and things like that. So that's something that's I've been around since 2011. And since then, of course, I've over the years, I met the team at NRS, NetherRealm Studios, down in Chicago. And, you know, sort of kind of put my name out there in terms of the competitive scene. And now here we are consulting for Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah, we should just make this clear. You don't work for the Mortal Kombat developers, but you've just been consulting with them and, I guess, trying to advocate and explain to them how the games can be made accessible. Does that kind of sum it up?
Pretty much. So essentially, yes. Obviously, we don't consult for free, right? So essentially, yeah, we were contracted to work at a specific time and dates, right, with them to kind of give feedback. So it was myself and, of course, the one and only Super Blind Man, Brandon Cole, very, very notable consultant in the accessibility community, and who has also been part of the project. He consulted, basically gave a lot of feedback in other areas of the game, where he, you know, I feel like it was more beneficial because of his experience with The Last of Us and other, you know, AAA titles that he's been working on. Whereas I focus mainly on the fighting game, like the fighting game aspect of the game itself. That's when we talk about the sound cues, and when we get to the specifics of the accessibility features, there are some areas that both of us sort of had our own input into that. But yes, essentially that's what it is. We were contracted to work with them, you know, we're obviously submitting feedback, but now just more like consultants out in the wild, right? with the rest of the players out there.
Before we get onto the Mortal Kombat specifics, I'm intrigued to know about your background in gaming, because for me, as someone who's been totally blind from birth, I've always just assumed that games were inaccessible. Or, I mean, I remember a few years ago playing, this probably sounds really basic to you, but the Nintendo Wii back in the day, and the Wii Sports game that used to come with, that had some brilliant sound effects, but it wasn't, you know, and you could play it, but it wasn't accessible as such. It was just the sounds happened to make it accessible. But games on like PlayStation and Xbox, they've always just felt kind of out of reach for me. So how did you get into this, you know, as someone who's blind or visually impaired?
Hey, that's a good question, especially, you know, kind of with a different background like that, because for me, I had vision in the past.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, Mortal Kombat has always been one of those things that visually just catches your attention with the way characters looked at the time. Just, you know, seeing these almost at the time, of course, not now. It looks really goofy now. But back in the 90s, you know, they were using what they call the digitized actors, right? So they literally capture human actors. And then they'll capture that, and then they transform it into like video game characters. So at the time, it did look realistic in comparison to, like, say, Street Fighter, which was more like anime, which is more, as we would say, cartoonish, but it's more like anime style, more like hand-drawn characters versus capturing real people, right? And these characters were doing things like throwing ice balls, you know, spears and all these fireballs, all these different things that look really cool with like kind of like dark and gritty backgrounds and things like that. So the interest came because of the way the game looked and the way these characters looked. And then, of course, over the years, you know, more and more I started learning about just the gaming culture and learning about games and other things like that. So and as you mentioned, a lot of the games back then didn't have accessibility, but I'm of the idea that with some of these games, they were what they call accidental, not accessibility, but just playability, right? Where you mentioned some of the things about the Wii, which is the SAM cues, right? Which has been implemented a lot in games now. You know, it's sometimes a few things like sound cues, sound indicators that kind of let you know feedback of what the game's happening. So, and then you have other games too, like Resident Evil 6 that had accidental playability with its navigation system. You know, the game itself is not accessible with that today's standards, but you know, there were things that along the way that sort of kind of gave way to the ideas that are now fully implemented without being accidental. Now it's more like, oh, these are some of the things that work and some of the other things that don't work. So for me, my background, I said it was visually at the time. But as I was losing my vision, I didn't want to let go of that hobby, right? Not letting go of something just because you lost your vision kind of thing. Originally, before actually, one thing that I did give up was being a football player. You know, here in the US, they call it soccer, but we know it's football. But, you know, nice. One of those things that, yeah, of course. You know, that's the only things that I gave up. But turns out that you can still play that, you know, learning about other people who are into like blind athletes who play, you know, modified versions of the sport. So it just shows that things can be done with modifications, right? It's just that, you know, so same thing with gaming, you know, things can be done if you modify them, if you get people who understand how, you know, someone who's blind could play these games. So the proper feedback instead of just guessing, right? And I think that's some of the things that we struggled at the beginning of the accessibility movement was being able to make that connection between players and developers. And those connections have been made. Now I think the work needs to be done with more about players and publishers, right? Publishers are still, I feel like they're still sort of missing that hit mark that developers are kind of getting the hang of now.
It's a fantastic background and a fantastic point as well, because, you know, you touched on the culture. It's not just losing a hobby. It's, you know, you get a full kind of, as you said, that gaming culture there. And yeah, you're right. You know, you shouldn't have to lose out on that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's a lot of things that, yeah, it's associated with disability. A lot of the times, you know, when things happen to them over the years, it's like it makes you feel like you have to give this up, right? When, you know, if you're born like other people who maybe are born with those conditions, you know, they adapt, you know, they somehow adapt to the things that they want to do. So they end up learning how to overcome those things from the get-go. Whereas there are people who over time they're used to living a certain way, but then life happens and things change. And sometimes that involves having a disability. And so that way, you know, it's different adapting in that regard, because you're used to one thing and now having to do it another way kind of thing. So definitely it's one of those things that you can't just give up just because you lost, you know, you're introduced to a new way of having to, you know, live now, whether it's a disability or even like environment, right? Even where you live, you know, things like that, all those things. So disability is just one of those other things too that have to be looked at it. I want to do this, but how can I do it if I don't have the tools necessary to do it, you know? So that's when I feel like accessibility comes in and says, hey, look, these are some of the ways that you can continue doing this. It might not be maybe similar to someone else, but you're achieving the same goal, which is, and for this particular case, it's having fun and being part of the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about Mortal Kombat then. So for those who are not familiar with it, just talk about the game in general, right? What is Mortal Kombat all about for those who don't know?
So the premise of Mortal Kombat, or just fighting games in general, like Street Fighter, Tekken, and all these different fighting games that are out there, essentially it's two characters on screen that are duking it out, beating each other up, in what they call a 2D platform, or essentially just left and right dimensions. These characters cannot move like away from the screen or towards the screen. They only move from left to right. But there are particular things that happen between these fights. But certain buttons are assigned to each attack, whether you have buttons for punches, buttons for kicks. And Mortal Kombat has a unique mechanic, which is a unique button for blocking. The rest of the fighting game genre, basically, you'd basically hold back, depending on which direction you're facing, to block your upcoming attacks. So, but Mortal Kombat is one of those things that it does its own thing, and essentially that's what Mortal Kombat is. It's a fighting game, two characters duking it out, and of course, one of the things that distinguishes Mortal Kombat from everybody else, I think, is it's the over the top violence that it comes with, you know, fatalities and brutalities and all these finishing moves that it has. Whereas other fighting games don't necessarily deal with that. And another thing that does distinguish Mortal Kombat, especially now under Warner Brothers, is having a story mode, a cinematic story mode, which, you know, tells the story of these characters, why they're fighting, what are their factions, you know, what are the reasoning as to why they face each other. You know, they even have intros now where they talk to each other based on their lore or, you know, their character relationships and things like that. So that is essentially Mortal Kombat. It's a fighting game. You push buttons, and those buttons have certain properties to them. You can pretty much just play if you just want to do special moves. You do certain combinations of buttons, and, you know, characters will throw an ice ball, a spear, or a fireball, or a flying kick across the screen, you know, things like that. So, and of course, in the competitive setting, it's more about what those buttons do in terms of numbers. You know, how much time do I have to do this move versus this other move, and how much time do I have to do a move that I just blocked against another opponent, and things like that. So I think of it like playing chess, but at a high pace.
That's a good way to describe it. So coming on to Mortal Kombat 1 specifically, let's get on to the fun stuff. So what are some of the accessibility features that are introduced?
So fighting games in general tend to be sort of playable once you hear round one fight, right? You know, once you memorize the button sequences, the button combinations, and the different things of your game, especially modern games, because back then, obviously, sound design wasn't as robust as it is now. Back then, everything was in mono, whereas now everything is in stereo, thank goodness. And so a lot of the times is you already can tell based on your position on screen. If you're familiar with how audio works, you can understand how there's a stereo panning. So if my character is facing from left to right, their sounds, their grunts, or their, you know, their fighting sounds are coming from one side versus the right opponent who's on the right side, and you can hear the sounds from there. And the sounds sort of, they basically follow the action on screen, where there's a character that teleports from left to right, that there's, you know, that their sounds will transfer from one side to the other according to their position on screen and things like that. So one of the things that was very crucial to make a fighting game accessible, right, rather than just being playable by accident, or memorizing menus, or memorizing where your character is located on screen if you want to pick them, one of the biggest things that was pushed for this time around was to have a screen reader. Now, those who are blind and visually impaired are very familiar with what that is, right? So essentially, the game offers the ability to go through the menus. You know, when the main screen of the game pops up, you know there's campaign, versus mode, customization, you know, learn, where you can practice your character. Even in the character select screen, you can browse through the characters and sort of, you know, you can hear which character is your cursor lays on, and, you know, things. And because it's a fighting game, one of the things that was pushed for as well is to read the pause menu. When you go into practice mode, you can pause and read the moves list, how do you perform them, what buttons you got to push for them, and everything. So that is one of the main things. The other things, so Mortal Kombat, it prides itself on showing off a lot of cinematic sequences. And a lot of the times it's against story mode, or in during fights, you have these things called fatal blows, which characters come in and do like this very like powerful moves. And it's, of course, it has, you know, it's very violent. And everything, of course, fatalities. So what they did is they added audio descriptions, which has never been done in a fighting game. They added descriptions to the cinematic sequences during fights, as well as the entire story mode with the campaign, which basically tells the stories of, you know, of the game, the characters and everything. And it has a full audio description. Another thing, too, that is tied specifically for the fighting game during matches, this is more like the I guess, from the competitive aspect, but it can be used by anyone, of course, is basically additional sound cues that basically tell you where are you positioned on screen based on the relation to the screen, not necessarily like maybe moving from left to right, but your distance of you and your opponent. So, and there's also audio cues that let you know that you are either on the left side or on the right side of the edges of the stages, so you can know exactly what to do in those particular scenarios. Because in fighting games, there are certain things that you can do in the middle of the screen, and maybe towards a little bit further on the left or on the right, and all the way to each corner. So there are specific things that you can do, whether it's you got to block certain things, or you got to do certain combos, or you got to do something, you know, different things that you got to do. And so there's sounds for that. There's even sounds for when you can tell that your opponent ducks and unducks, or like, you know, stands up, ducks and then stands up. There's sound cues for that. There's also sound cues for when your opponent blocks and lets go block, to let you know that, oh, I can push a button because I can, you know, punish them for like letting go block now, kind of thing. And there's even sounds that let you know. So in fighting games, you have different types of attacks that it won't be enough time to describe exactly, but just know that there are attacks that you can duck, basically. So they call highs, overheads, mids, and lows. So depending on which part of the body that the character will hit, you know, if it's going to be above your head and, you know, in the middle of your body or your legs or whatever. So those are characterized by highs, mids, and lows. And there's even differences. So there is even sound cues that you can use to kind of let you know what hits are you blocking, you know, or you're getting hit by. Are you getting hit by an overhead, by a high or a low or mid? So that's a little bit more of, again, of the competitive part of it, you know, that you can use and things like that. And there's more. So there's a lot of sound cues that help you throughout your fights, you know, throughout the games and everything like that.
And is all of this available? So you mentioned the screen reader, the audio description, and the sound cues and everything. Is this all accessible from the start? Like, is there a way of turning it on? Like, do you need sighted help to get it set up, or can you just grab this and, you know, enable these?
That's a very good question. As soon as you load up the game, you are going to be prompted if you want to go through the accessibility presets. So right away, if you're blind, especially, the screen reader itself will pop up and let you know, would you like to enable screen reader? And once you do, then just follow the rest of the prompts, you know, to set up everything else. And it reads it all the way through. And once you do that, you log into the game and it just, you take off from there. And what's great about that is that you can always go back to the settings menu and sort of adjust your own customized settings that you prefer for yourself. So one of the things that Brandon actually advocates for a lot, and I definitely agree with this, is giving players as much control as possible. You can have presets just to kind of give an idea of what would it be like. But if you maybe some things you find a little too loud, such as, you know, a lot of blind players like to turn off the music, for example. So you can go into the settings afterwards, turn down the music, or maybe you don't necessarily need all of those extra sound cues that the game gives you. So you can maybe turn a few of them off, or, you know, or if you want, just turn all of them on, you know. So yes, from the get-go, you're able to set these up as soon as you load up the game.
Amazing. Going back to sort of gaming in general, do you think there's a lot of blind people, like I was talking earlier about, you know, I've always just assumed it's not accessible. Do you think there's a lot of blind people who just don't realize how accessible this industry is or is becoming now?
I think it's a mixture of both. I feel like there's always been blind players out there, except that, you know, because they assume, you know, I've been there too, actually. So a lot of us thought that we are the only ones, right? So the more people I'm meeting, the more it seems more people are relatable, because they always say, well, I thought I was the only one because this game doesn't have accessibility, but I'm here trying to, you know, find ways to play it because either I'm a fan or I just want to play games, right? But then you also have the other side where, yes, you do still, there's still people who are, you know, skeptical of like, oh, maybe this is not accessible or whatever, or maybe haven't played a game in a long time because maybe we got people who maybe just lost their vision recently as well. So there's always somebody new who's always going to find out, oh, I didn't know you could do this. I don't know you could do that, right? And so there's I feel like there's a mixture of different types of people that are pretty much aware of where the industry is headed, and that people right now are still finding out that, hey, I didn't know blind people play games and I'm blind. How do I go about this? Who do I talk to? What's the community to reach out to? And thankfully now there's plenty of communities. You know, you got people who are more into action adventure games. You know, you got people who are strictly into fighting games. You got more people who are maybe into like card games, like Hearthstone, right? So there's all these different communities that are popping up because of all these games that are becoming more accessible.
And on that topic, I guess, do you think Mortal Kombat 1 is a good place to start if people have never played these types of games before?
For fighting games, I've maybe I say yes to just kind of get your you know, kind of like the feel for just being able to push buttons and feel how things are happening on screen, right? To kind of give you that sense of, oh, maybe if I do, if there, maybe there's other games that have accessibility, it's going to make me, am I going to get the same feeling, right? So Mortal Kombat is actually pretty, it's designed to be picked up pretty straightforward. Like a lot, most characters have pretty much very similar inputs that you do to do special moves. So for example, there are characters that, you know, again, throw special powers, right? Or they do what they call, you know, dive kicks, where they jump and like they kick from the, you know, from up going down. So a lot of these inputs are very similar, like let's say down and then you push back depending on what you're facing into a face button. So down, back, square, or actually the actual input is down, back, you know, circle or B if you're on Xbox. So it's because and we in fighting games, we do use universal notations to talk about the different face buttons, like your X on a PlayStation is like we have a numbering system essentially. But point being is that yes, it's definitely one of those games that it's a good starting point to you know, explore, see if that's something that you want to get into or not.
And if people are interested, where can people go to find out more? What platforms is this available on?
I know that PlayStation has been doing their own accessibility list. A lot of these major platforms are now starting to actually generate a list of accessible games. Like if you go into the PlayStation Store or the Xbox Store as well, there's actually a list of what accessible games are. They give you a description of what accessibility features they may have, because they also can tell you what accessibility features that meets your needs, right? Because if you see something that it's not as blind friendly, then you will be able to tell based on what the descriptions tell you. You know, maybe this game has more, is targeted more for someone with a motor disability, or it's more for people with color blindness, right? Or maybe it's targeted more for those who are hard of hearing, right? So there is resources, and of course you can always check out places like Can I Play That, which is a good website for accessibility reviews. But there are great resources out there and on the internet now that give you like an overview of what accessibility features are. Of course, then there are us who post videos constantly, right? Like I know that definitely Sightless Combat is one of those contributors, right? Streaming.
Yeah, our very own.
Absolutely. Streaming and everything, and sort of kind of showcasing different accessibility games. Now, that's something that I definitely want to start doing. Again, I've always been a competitor, so a lot of my content is focused more on high-level gameplay with fighting games, you know, playing at the highest level with top-level competitors, and, you know, it's been like that. But I definitely want to start being part of that too, is showcasing different accessible games that aren't necessarily fighting games. Like you have like As Dusk Falls on Xbox, right? You have Hearthstone, you have The Last of Us, right? So there's all these different games that are accessible. And so the goal is to showcase all of those, you know, things to maybe people who are, again, maybe just so stuck in the fighting game genre that, hey, you know, if you want to take a break from fighting games, here are some other games that are accessible.
Amazing. If people are hearing this and they want to give the new Mortal Kombat a go, where can they find that? What platforms can they get on?
So Mortal Kombat 1 is available for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, the Nintendo Switch, and for PC.
Fantastic. And finally, before I let you go, where can people find out more about you and follow your gaming and your streaming?
Oh, yeah, so absolutely. So definitely be sure to check out my I stream as well. So I'm on twitch.tv/KH_Rattlehead. That's RATTLEHEAD. And on my YouTube channel is youtube.com/@KH Rattlehead, no underscore. And I'm also on Twitter or X at KH Rattlehead as well. So I try to be consistent on all of my platforms, but those are definitely the areas that you can follow me on. I'm on Instagram as well, which is the same thing. It's @KH Rattlehead. So you should be able to find me on all of those platforms.
Well, there you go. Gamer, streamer, and games consultant, Rattlehead. Thanks for joining us here on Connect Radio.
Likewise, and thank you for having me.
Time for our fifth and final episode of the narrator-focused built-in screen reader series. And in this episode, we will talk navigation again and talk about narrator views. Now, what are narrator views? This is where, once again, you can look for specific types of content on an app or a website, similar to what we did with scan mode. The difference is you are not using first letter navigation to look for headings by pressing H or buttons by pressing B. This is where you'll be using some keyboard shortcuts to do so. Now, the more common use for narrator views is with laptops that have a touchscreen or with Windows-based tablets. Although narrator views are more popular with touchscreens, I will show you this anyway, so at least you can have a look at what it does. We will also look at narrator find and how to bring up lists of links and headings on a website or in an app to make finding things a bit easier. So first of all, we will show you what some of the few narrator views are and how to change between them. So we will find out where we are at the moment with narrator key and the letter T.
Complete guide to narrator, Microsoft support, Google Chrome pane.
So I have brought us to the correct website for the narrator guide. Now, in order to change narrator views, you need to press narrator control and up or down arrow. So let's have a listen to some of these views.
Items, paragraphs, sentences, lines, words, characters, tables, links, headings, landmarks, form fields, items.
So as you can hear, you can browse through various elements that you've just heard. So quite similar to some of the things you have heard when we talked about scan mode, when you have form fields such as text fields or headings or words and characters. This is something similar, but just works in a different fashion. So let's, for example, press narrator control and down arrow.
Sentences, lines, words, characters, tables, links, headings.
And we'll go to headings. In order to go through the view, which I've selected to be headings, I need to press narrator key, which is caps lock, plus left and right arrow. So let's press narrator plus right arrow.
Complete guide to narrator, heading level 1 banner landmark. Table of contents, heading level 2 region landmark.
And now let's do the reverse, narrator key plus left arrow.
Complete guide to narrator, heading level 1 banner landmark.
And we've gone back to the previous heading. That is a simple way of using narrator views. So you can either use that or you can use the scan mode we mentioned in the previous episode. It's more what you find comfortable personally. As I've said, narrator views are more often used with touch screens than anything, but they can also be used with a keyboard, so you can have the option if you wish. Now, next, we will show you narrator find. When it comes to narrator find, this is, again, especially useful in large documents or in websites where you want to find a specific piece of text, for example. So to quickly demonstrate this, I will press narrator, control, and F.
Narrator find window, search for, edit, chapter, Alt plus S, scan off, R.
So we will type the word we are looking for to find, for example, and see what it finds. So we'll type in the word touch.
H.
And now, if I press enter, it will take me to the first instance where the letter touch appears on this website.
Table, enter table, 14 by 2, link, chapter 6, using narrator with touch, row 7 of 14, column 1 of 2, scan.
Now, if there is more times the word touch appears, I can easily find them. So if I press the narrator key plus the F3 key, it should take me to the next instance where the word touch appears, if there is one.
Touch, including basic gestures.
And if I do narrator shift F3.
Link, chapter 6, using narrator with touch, column 1 of 2.
It then takes me to the previous result. So that can be quite a simple way to find things, especially in large apps or large bits of text or indeed large web pages. Last but not least, I wanted to show you how to get lists of links and headings up on the screen to quickly have a look through them in a much easier way, especially again with large web pages, it can be quite beneficial. So this will require the F function keys in the top row again. If we press the narrator key followed by F6, we will see what we will hear.
Search headings window, search list, complete guide to narrator, heading level 1, 1 of 36, selected.
So as you've now heard, we are in a list of all the headings on the web page, and there are 36 of them. And with the up and down arrow keys, I can easily go through them. And by pressing enter on the heading, it will take me straight to that part of the web page, which makes it, again, nice and easy to browse for specific content on a web page. Or if you've got headings in an email or a document or another application, again, that could make it a lot easier for you. You can do the same with links. If you press narrator plus F7.
Search hyperlinks window, search list, skip to Microsoft, link, support, link, 3 of 99, selected. Microsoft 365, link, 4 of 99, selected.
You can now use the arrow keys to browse through the list of links on this web page, and by clicking enter on any of the links in this list, it can open it. And that, quite simply, is another quick way of navigating through large web pages or app windows. So that is narrator views. And that is indeed the end of our narrator-focused 5-episode series on built-in screen readers. We hope that this has given you a bit of a guideline as to how to use Narrator and explore the computer on your own straight out of the box. If you have any questions or would like more demos, we are more than happy to answer them and try and help you out. So feel free to get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We will also do a Mac version of this series very soon, so you have knowledge of both. We hope you have enjoyed this built-in screen reader series on Narrator Screen Reader.
Today, I'm going to share some tips on digital well-being. Tip number one is really important. It's to fill your feeds with the things you enjoy. We can often feel pressured to follow celebrities or people in the specific niches that we think we should be following because our friends or family might do the same. It's not a popularity contest. Filling your feeds and your timelines with the things that matter to you is really important because it will mean that you will enjoy using those digital spaces a lot more compared to if you're just mindlessly scrolling through. And that leads me nicely onto the next point. Limit scrolling. I'm sure we've all been there when we scroll through Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok aimlessly when we should have been probably doing some important chores or some tasks that we really need to get done. Limiting scrolling helps you to find a good balance between limiting your use of social media, not getting too bogged down, and just being in the moment and present in every single day. The next tip is to take a break if you need to. The news and social media can sometimes feel really heavy. If you feel like it's getting too much, don't be afraid to log out of your apps, take a break, even delete them if you need to. Your accounts and the things that matter to you are still going to be there when you feel you can come back and you're ready to do so. And finally, use platforms you enjoy. As blind and partially sighted people, we can often be up against accessibility on digital platforms. Some social media platforms aren't always the most accessible, and the same goes for websites. So use the platforms you enjoy using because it will make your time on social media and navigating the internet much more fun and enjoyable.
Many thanks there to Holly Tuke with information about digital well-being. Let's just quickly check in with our hosts to find out how you folks are taking care of your digital well-being. Callum Stoneman, you got any thoughts around this?
Yeah, it is an important topic. I mean, as Holly said there, the tech and the news and the social media is just everywhere. What I quite like doing is, I mean, this isn't well-being as such, but I think just be selective about the notifications that you get. I try and have most of my notifications turned off nowadays unless it's an app that I really need to hear from. And try and get to grips with the kind of screen time features. So there's a feature on iOS, and I think they're similar on Android as well. If you go to settings and then screen time, you can turn that on and you can restrict your amount of time on certain apps. So you can say, you know, I only want to use social media apps for, say, an hour a day. And then after that, it won't kind of block you. It won't stop you from going on, but it will say you've got to override it and you've got to put a passcode in. And the way they market this is more aimed at parents, you know, for managing their kids' screen time. But you can use it for yourself as well. And have a look into your focus modes as well. I know this exists on both iOS and Android. You can set up different focuses and you can say, okay, when I turn my work focus on, I only want notifications from, say, Teams and Outlook. I don't want any social media. I don't want any, you know, WhatsApp. I don't want anything else coming through. But then you can do it the other way as well. So you can say after 5 p.m. every night, I don't want to hear anything from Teams and Outlook and Slack or whatever else you've got. Although, to be honest, I just don't have any work stuff on my personal phone. I know there's some jobs where you need to do that, you need to be around. But honestly, for the work that I'm doing, it's not the end of the world. If when I log off, I'm off. You literally can't contact me unless you've got my personal details.
Tasneem, how are you looking after your digital well-being?
A very important question. And I agree with everything that Callum has said. I know a lot of people who do have their work stuff on their personal devices. And I've intentionally declined to have work WhatsApp stuff on purely for that reason, because I don't want to be, you know, notified and messaged multiple times when I'm trying to say, you know, wind down and go to sleep. So as most people know, I'm not on social media. So that's how I'm taking care of myself. And yeah, I do think that using those, you know, parental guidelines, although that's what it's designed for, you know, really utilizing and having a good balance, I think, is really important. So whatever works for you, you know, setting yourself those kind of, you know, an hour a day on this or whatever. But for me, it always comes down to gaining that balance, looking at what works for you, what's good for you in your schedule, in your diaries. And I always prefer not to take any calls later on in the evening, because I know my brain is very active. If I have a conversation with somebody, I'm going to be doing a lot more exploring and reflecting on that. If I'm reading something quite factual regarding work later on in the evening, I'll be awake all night thinking about that. So for me, it's really important that I spend time winding down before I go to sleep. So, you know, that's really important for me, but everybody's minds works differently. So I think it's about really knowing yourself and looking at what your strengths are, where you need to look at really working on yourself and really implementing those strategies.
For me, focus was one that I definitely have a nighttime focus scheduled between midnight and like 8 a.m., 7 a.m. to not be interrupted at all. But the other one is having downtime before you go to bed, which sort of alludes to what Taz said, but basically the key for me there is a certain time before I go to bed. Depends, sometimes it will be shorter, sometimes it'll be longer. I basically put all my devices away, so phone goes on charge, and I just lie down and listen to the radio. And yeah, devices ping with notifications, but I don't pay attention. I kind of make a point of having a lie down, listen to the radio, and kind of wind down a bit and not really look at notifications, since I do that most of the day. It's having that bit of downtime, I think, where you can just relax and listen to something and just not touch your notifications for a bit. Yeah, use your technology to play you something, but just relax and listen to that and help prepare you to go to sleep really eventually. And that's for me quite useful, something I found I started doing a lot since I started work.
For me, it's been the Apple Watch, you know, the nudges to get up and move around every hour, and using the mindful minute, you know, and stuff like that. I found that that's really been a great help, actually. So let us know if you've got any tips about how to manage your digital well-being. If you're quick, you might even get on next week's show, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. How are you managing your digital well-being? Well, thank you very much, everybody. Tune in next time when we'll be hearing about the Navilens trial on the Docklands Light Railway. We'll also be hearing from Winston Chen, the creator of Voice Dream Reader. So do tune in for that. But from all of us here, it's time to say bye.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.